Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conscious Animal Radio. I'm your host, Christine Egro. I'd like to thank our sponsor, PetPop.com, where pets are popular. Go to PetPop.com and get your free pet profile. And remember, after Halloween, they will be hosting a best dress contest, so take your picks and upload them to your profile. While I'm on the topic of Halloween, I received this question from Cheryl in Portland, Maine, asking, "This is the first Halloween for me and Scooter, a 2-year-old adopted lab mix. I want to dress her up and take her out for Halloween. What do you suggest?" Well, Cheryl, first thing is to be conscious of your dog's temperament. Does she have a strong temperament, meaning nothing bothers her, noises, yelling, screaming, running? Or does she have a challenged temperament in the sense that she is nervous or anxious and noises make everything worse? When I look at her, it appears that she has a challenged temperament, so I'd say don't take her out. Halloween can even scare me. I hate that I can't see people's faces, and dogs are no different. A mask can rock even the most stable dog. If you want her to experience Halloween, consider taking her to a supervised dog Halloween party, but be prepared to leave if she is uncomfortable or scared or shaking. If you decide to stay home and answer the door, the constant ringing of the doorbell and strangers yelling when you open the door will no doubt freak her out also. So I suggest making her a quiet place to rest, but don't close her off. So if you use the bathroom, don't close the door. I like to use child gates to make a protective barrier so that she can't run around. Put her blankets in there, her bed, and some water, and check on her periodically. If she's doing okay, especially after the first doorbell rings, if there's no barking or hysterics, give her lots of praise. Really reward her for her positive behavior. You can also give her some Mimolus flower essence to help support the fear state. And if you want to learn more about flower essences, you can get my 70-page ebook, Flower Power for Animals, Using Flower Essences to Support, Heal, and Transform, at flowerpowerforanimals.com. Cheryl and Scooter, I hope this helps. If you have questions about your animal's health, wellness, or behavior, you can email those questions to me at connect@consciousanimal.com, or you can call the Enlightened Listener line at 214-615-6505, extension 9250. Again, the Enlightened Listener line is 214-615-6505, extension 9250. And that's different from our guest call-in number while we're live on the radio. The guest call-in number while we're live on the radio is 646-716-7281, and you can also IM through AOL Instant Messenger. And all of that contact information is available on the Conscious Animal Radio website at consciousanimalradio.com. My guest today is Geeti House, and she's speaking with us all the way from Australia. Geeti and her husband, Ron, have been talking to the wild birds that live in the open Australian bush in southern Queensland for over 6 years. The birds range from big and aggressive, such as the crows, to the small and vulnerable, like the thornbills. Six of the species that have formed long-term relationships with Geeti and Ron are considered to be amongst the top 8 most aggressive birds in the country. At the top of the list are the magpies, who are well known for attacking humans, particularly during breeding season. I personally have had many amazing experiences with birds in my life, and I'm so excited to have Geeti on the show. Let me just bring her on here. Hi, welcome, Geeti. Are you there?
Hello, Christine. How are you? This is Geeti.
I am so fine, thank you. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
I
would like to say good day to all your listeners from Australia.
Great, thank you. It's very nice of you to be here all the way from Australia. I just am so fascinated with your story and the experiences that you've been having with the birds. How did it all start for you?
Well, it all started when Ron, my husband, took our 2 German Shepherd dogs for a walk one day. And they, in their usual habit, were sort of sauntering in front. And there was this little magpie chick sitting on the wire fence, on the bottom wire fence beside the road. And he could see them coming for yards. But he just sat there and just waited for them. And they walked up to him in their dog fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't fly off. He didn't hop away. He just sat there, and they walked up to him and dabbed him on the chest with their noses. And then they continued along the way, and the bird just still sat there and watched and looked totally unperturbed by the experience. And Ron walked past, and then the bird followed them home and became a friend with the dogs.
Oh, that's amazing. When I lived in Colorado for a while, and when I first moved there, two of my dogs were with me, and two had stayed behind to follow later. And one of the dogs was a Chinese Sharpei, and it was the magpie who would come and sit on the balcony, and there was a glass door between them. But every morning, the magpie would come and sit and have this relationship with my Sharpei. She would stare out the window at the magpie, and the magpie would stare back. And they, you know, I know, it was amazing. And it was actually the magpie that that eventually saved me when I was out hiking. I always hiked by myself, and I got lost one day. I got really turned around, and I asked the universe for help, and magpie came. And I was going in the wrong direction, and I heard this, you know, caw-caw, caw-caw. I was like, yes. And I turned around, and the magpie was sitting in a tree, and I started to go back in the wrong direction, and it called to me again. So I thought, okay, well, I asked for help. So I followed the magpie, and it went from tree to tree to tree and led me out of where I was.
Oh, isn't that just so wonderful?
Isn't it? I mean, it just, I love birds. So, I really want to know, like, you know, what are the different kinds of birds you talk to, and what types of relationships have you formed with them?
Yes, well, it started with this little magpie chick. And then some months later, when, you know, my dogs were old, and during Benny's last days, this little bird would come and sit on the dinner bone and peck at Benny's dinner bone, and Benny would be so happy to see him.
Aww.
And two big birds would come and knock him off the bone. And he would complain to Benny, and Benny would scold the bigger dogs, birds, and send them off. And this little chap would jump back on the bone and continue with his dinner. And I noticed this friendship, and I thought, this is very remarkable. And when Benny died, or rather I should say passed over, we wanted to continue our friendship with the bird. So it began with one single magpie, but very soon we became friends with his family.
Mm-hmm.
And then we began to discover that there were lots of other birds that were his friends. And it just sort of grew from there. And we have birds, we have now long-term friendships with species like the noisy miners, two species of white butcher birds, currawongs and crows, and these are birds who tell us things about their families, who help us with problems, and who actually do things with us. Then we have other birds like the thornbills and the scrub wrens, who do not eat anything in our yard, but they like to come and talk to us. They actually will come out of their way, even though they're so tiny and vulnerable, because, you know, bigger birds can catch them.
Right.
And they will expose themselves just to find an opportunity to talk to us. And that is just so awesome and so humbling, you know.
It is. So what are your, the birds who have basically enfolded you into their families, what are those relationships like?
Well, what the birds do is they are very protective of us. They have protected us from snakes. They worry enormously if we happen to be out in the dark, because these are all daytime birds. So they get nervous once it gets dark. because they can't see without the sun. So for them, if we are out in the dark, they get very worried. And they actually come out of the nest, of the roosting spot, and tell us to go inside.
Oh, do they?
Because it's not safe for good humans to be out in the dark at that hour.
Right.
And it's just so cute. And if any bird is missing, or I'm calling for a particular bird, and the bird is not around because he's gone visiting or something, the other birds will go looking and will find them. If they can't find them, they come back and they tell me.
Oh.
I've actually had birds will drop the food that they're about to swallow and go to call a bird that I'm looking for.
Oh, and how do you call them? I mean, do you call them with their native bird call, or do you have a different way of speaking with them?
Oh, I just have names for them.
Oh, you do?
I just give them names. And they absolutely love it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Because the minute you name them and talk to them as an individual, it's like one has made a personal connection, mm-hmm. recognize them for who they are, and they just love it.
I really enjoy about what your experience and what you're speaking about is the fact that you are able to experience and enjoy the beauty of birds without making them captive. You know, without taking them out of their natural habitat. And I know that there are many birds who actually enjoy being a part of somebody's home and being in the house. So I'm not discounting or discrediting, you know, people who have birds as pets. But I really like that you're able to have this relationship with them and they still are out in their natural habitat.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, the thing that I have found just so awesome is that because they are out in their own habitat, they can do things and show us things that they don't otherwise would have a chance to do for us.
Right. And what kind of things?
Like, what can a little bird do to, you know, show their appreciation to a human? And here are magpies who actually attack humans during breeding season. And here is this young magpie female about to become a mother who doesn't really know me because she is just mated with my favorite magpie.
Right. with your son.
She comes from the real bush and there are no humans over there.
Right.
And so she is not grown up with us and doesn't know us. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, now is she going to accept me? Or is she going to attack me? And she calls me. She leaves, you know, she doesn't show any interest in the food, even though she's only seen me once or twice. I go out into the bush to sort of try and find her. And she leaves the food. And she calls me and, you know, takes me from tree to tree to her nest and shows me how she's building her nest.
It's validating to me to hear you say that she took you from tree to tree, because that's what this magpie did in Colorado, right? It from tree to tree led me out. Why do you think, why the magpies? What is it about magpies?
I think it is because they are like the birds that do the mediating between the smaller birds and the larger birds.
Mm.
So they're very intelligent. And they are very good negotiators and very good communicators. And they are, you know, sort of in their own skill level, they are big enough and strong enough to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, as a result, comfortable and confident that they can sort of carry a communication. And if anybody tries to do something that is, you know, not nice, they think they can get away from it. And at the same time, they, being middle-sized birds as well, can sort of negotiate with the more aggressive birds like the crows and the hawks,
they
as well as look after the smaller birds.
Right. I mean, they seem to have, just from, you know, listening to you and my own experience with them, they seem to have this curiosity about all species.
They do. I read a book on magpies by one of the CSIRO scientists.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Center for Scientific Research in Australia. And her name is Dr. Gisela Kaplan. And she says magpies are like the supervisors, and they keep an inventory of who belongs where and who lives where,
mm-hmm.
and they sort of keep an eye out for intruders.
Right, and they have their feathers on the pulse of everybody, right?
That's right. And
yeah.
The little birds will go to them and ask them for help, and
right.
The big birds will go to them and ask them for help.
And they
like to boss everybody around.
I mean, they're such interesting birds, and I, you know, I'm in New York City now, and magpies are not indigenous to this area. I mean, there's crows, and I know are they the same family, crows and magpies?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe they belong to the same family.
Yeah, but the crows are definitely different, you know. I'd say I miss the magpies is what my point was.
That's right. Definitely. But, you know, the crows are also very intelligent mm-hmm. birds, and they're very intuitive birds. And despite their outward aggression, they're actually birds that help others a lot.
Mm-hmm. So what have birds shown you about the relationships within their families?
Oh, extraordinary stuff, you know. I used to hear stories, or you sort of see Discovery Channel, and you sort of see the parent birds sort of edging the young ones out, and you think, oh, gosh, they leave home, and it's so sad, and they don't know what's happening anymore. Well, I've changed that view completely, because they keep in touch with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, for starters, when they have younger ones, no, let me go back a step, actually.
Okay.
There is a difference between the way birds live in the city from the way they live in the country. Because in the city, there are fewer trees.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are much, you know, bigger restrictions on the space that they have. So the younger birds are sort of encouraged to leave home at a younger age. Whereas in the country, where there's more space, there isn't as much pressure.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the families are able to stay together for longer,
mm-hmm.
and that gives us the opportunity to observe them. And what happens is that when the new chicks come, the older brothers and sisters help look after it right from the time it is in the nest.
Hmm.
And they help feed it, and they help protect it, and then help, of course, teach and play with it.
Right.
And when the young adults start leaving home, the parents very often negotiate a place for them elsewhere.
Hmm.
And they go visiting, and the whole family goes to see the other people, the other birds,
right.
So to speak, and check them out. And there's many trips that go up and down, you know, while they're checking out the different areas and working out where they should settle their young adult.
Wow.
And if there is a clan nearby that has more influence and can negotiate a better position, they will squabble with that clan and negotiate, make deals with the clan to say, get a better position for our child. And and we've seen, actually, the clan give up their territory to give their child a better position elsewhere.
And is this with all birds, or just specific species, or do they all do this?
Yeah, a lot of this observation is based on magpies.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder for the human eye to differentiate between individual crows.
Right.
So I'm not very good at distinguishing one crow from another,
right?
At a distance. So I don't know whether that happens with them. But I know that with kookaburras, they keep up to 4 generations of their kids with them.
Wow, that's amazing.
So I suspect that it is not unique to magpies. I suspect that there are many birds that follow rather complex systems like that.
And do you know, I mean, you mentioned sort of the difference between at least city birds and country birds, for lack of another word. you know, just the difference in terms of how long the chicks are able to stay. Do you know what they do in the city? Is it the same kind of thing, or do you not have knowledge of that?
In the city, they tend to encourage the kids to leave home before they are a year old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's time for them to start the new brood,
right?
They tend to get the young adults to leave home.
But do they help them in the same way?
They do. So, and I think there are variations,
right.
I found in just our observations. That just in humans, some families are closer and some personalities are more independent and some birds like traveling,
right.
And others like staying at home. There are just as many variations in their personalities and also in their attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And families that have only one chick, that chick has a tendency to go looking for a friend that's their own age. So they will actually go visiting another family and staying with them for 2 or 3 days. And the parents of the other chicks will actually look after this visiting chick and even feed them, you know, in as much as putting food in their beak.
Right.
While they are with them.
Do you ever see the species interrelating or do they strictly stay to their own bird kind?
Okay. In terms of visiting and in terms of negotiating territories, they do that within their own species.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, they are absolutely bosom buddies with heaps of species.
Oh, that's great.
They have heaps of partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the noisy miners and the magpies in our district, for example, everywhere a magpie goes, a miner is sure to follow.
Why is that? Is there a reason for that? Or just?
Yes, from the time that they're in the nest, because the miners being flock birds, they are very good, because there are 30 or 40 of them, they are very good at spreading themselves around and
mm-hmm.
keeping an eye out for snakes and eagles and hawks and issuing an alarm. So the magpies, because they peck on the ground, they have to spend a lot of time walking on the ground looking for bugs.
Mm-hmm.
So the miners do the babysitting for them in the trees. And the same thing with the butcher birds. And in return, the magpies chase the hawks for them.
Oh, nice.
So they have partnerships, and I've actually seen miners come and call a magpie and take the magpie up into the tree, and they go behind a clump of leaves, and the miner goes in, comes out and tells the magpie something, and then the magpie goes in and checks it out as well and comes back out. And, you know, they're busy doing things with each other all the time. And, in fact, I've actually seen parrots, Rosellas, babysit for the magpies.
That's amazing.
For almost 45 minutes
mm-hmm.
on this one occasion that I was prepared to stand there for as long as 45 minutes and just watch what was happening. You know, they were just sitting there beside the nest. The parents are busy elsewhere. And they're keeping an eye on the baby and chatting with the baby.
It's fascinating. I had said when I was talking about the show coming up, I had said that it would change how you see birds, and it does. I don't know that I will ever be able to watch a bird flying in the tree and not wonder, where are they going to? What story are they telling? You know, it's fascinating. fascinating. when I was doing my MBA, a woman, she just sort of showed up, and she gave me, she had had a number of zebra finch hatch. I don't know if she was, like, officially breeding them or what she was doing, but she gave me a zebra finch. And I don't even know what possessed me to do this, but I brought the bird home, and I would let him out of the cage, and he would fly up and sit on the top of the door jamb. And I would lay on the kitchen floor, and I would tap my finger on the floor. And then after a while, you know, I would shut the light off, and I would catch him and put him back in the cage and close the door. And I did this for, I think, a couple of weeks. And eventually he came down to check out what I was doing. And eventually just started coming and sitting on my shoulder. And he became this really amazing friend to me. But I never really understood what happened, like how that all transpired. And I'm just with your, you know, with your knowledge of birds and your experience, what did we do? Do you know?
I can't honestly say that I do.
Okay. But it's interesting, isn't
because,
it?
Because I'm not really an expert on birds. I don't think of myself as a bird person.
You know, if you had to get, I mean, just based on what you know about them, I mean, what do you, I mean, obviously there was a curiosity there, you know, where he decided to come down and check me out.
No. You know, what I have learned from birds is, well, there's several things I have learned from them. One is that they are deeply spiritual,
mm-hmm.
and they are very grateful. You know, it's just, you know, I think now, back, I look back at my life, and I think, how was I so unaware of this remarkable beauty around me?
Mm-hmm.
Not because I didn't admire birds, but I was just so unaware of how wonderful they are. I used to chuck food over the fence, you know, scraps, and I used to just not pay any attention to what was happening to the scraps. And since I've started actually watching and listening, I found that not a single bird takes food for granted.
Mm-hmm.
They are very observant of behavior. They're very observant of what you are doing, and they want to interact with you.
Mm-hmm.
They want to communicate with you. And the reason we don't get as much interaction and as much communication as the birds would like to actually give us is because we are not paying attention.
Right.
We are so busy doing our own thing, and also because we think that we can't communicate with them, that we just don't take the interest. So they ignore us because we are ignoring them.
Mm-hmm.
But from the time I started looking, I noticed that not a single scrap of food would a single bird pick up and not want to say thank you. Birds that normally just fly away and don't pay any attention would come and sit on the fence and come towards me just to say thank you.
Mm-hmm. You know, when
and
you
that I was not paying attention before.
Right, right. When you,
so
when
I think that, you know, they want interaction and they want to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you this story about a scrub wren, which is also a small and vulnerable bird. We were going to put in a new water tank, and so we had to dig a fairly big ditch for it to level the ground. And Ron is busy in the ditch with the shovel, shoveling heaps of dirt and just flicking it out over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And this little scrub wren comes out of the bushes and comes and sits right on the edge and talks to Ron. And totally unperturbed by the fact that dirt is being flicked out
right
in his direction. And he just wanted to talk, and we were in his territory, and he just wanted to say hello because this was his opportunity
mm-hmm.
to catch our attention. So I think it is the fact that the birds want to interact and communicate, and you were doing something that it was trying to understand.
Right, right. When you mentioned birds saying thank you, I once had this really wonderful experience happen where a red-tailed hawk flew into a mudroom and couldn't make its way out, and it was beating its wings against the glass. And I heard the noise, and I went to see what was going on, and I walked out, and here was this, like, amazingly beautiful bird. And so I just said to it, you know, it's okay if you let me, you know, I will touch you, and I will help you get out of here. I said, but you have to just relax. So I, you know, walked up behind him, and I took him in my hands and just gently wrapped my hands around him, took him to the door, and I opened my hand, and he didn't fly away immediately. There was a hesitation, and as he flew, he said, thank you. And I was like, oh, that was so amazing, you know. But they do, you know, they do say thank you.
They say thank you. They say thank you, and they love being thanked in return.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one can argue that because a lot of these birds come here, and, you know, in order to make friends with Maggie and his friends, we started to feed them. But time and time again, we have seen that food has nothing to do with it. Food is just a way of socializing and of earning trust, you know.
Right.
But that is all it is, because they don't really need it. We have gone for walks and seen birds that, of course, don't come to our yard and don't eat anything that we have to offer. And we have tried to photograph just birds in the field. And if we just stand there and say thank you, hornbills, who are so tiny, they just look like, you know, leaves floating in the grass, have left the field and come and placed themselves right in front of us and walked along with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such an awesome experience. And only because we said thank you.
I bet so. It's so beautiful, and it's so, I don't know, there's such a simplicity to it. You know, it's not a complicated process. It's simply being and being present with the spirit of others, and it's amazing. I mean, it's really beautiful. I think a question that I have is both for city folk and for country folk. What are your suggestions in terms of you know, connecting with birds and beginning to develop relationships with them?
I think the first step really is to just say hello.
Mm-hmm.
And to look a bird in the eye and say, hello, how are you? And whether or not the bird responds, because initially the bird is going to be very surprised that suddenly there's a human willing to talk to them.
Right.
You know, so they may, you know, be a bit nervous of this strange reaction. So it may take them a few days to get used to it. But regardless of their reaction, just say thank you, no matter what they do. And there's a power in those words. There's a feeling and a spirit that goes with it that immediately connects. And they begin to respond beautifully to it. I've had birds who don't know me show me their babies and let me photograph them and just stand there and just let me see their baby because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had birds who are ready to attack because they don't know me at all, and I just stand there and say, hello, how are you?
Right.
Thank you for talking to me. And they calm down. Now, I'm not saying that everyone should just go to an aggressive bird and say, thank you, it might not work. But, you know, in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing is to give them water. Water is even more important than food, I found, to them, because they all need a drink.
Right.
And it's hard to get good quality water. And if one can find a safe spot, even in a balcony or on a window ledge where they can come and sit safely and have a drink and a little bit of a bath. They just feel so grateful for whoever provides that. It immediately builds trust.
No, I think it's really wonderful, and I'm really thinking about going out after I get done with the show today and just talking to the birds in the neighborhood.
And if you see a bird, if you begin to recognize a bird, just give them some names.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are two or three that come together, just give them two or three names. They'll choose the one they like. And they can be quite fussy about the name that they like.
Oh, that's interesting.
So if you find they're not responding to certain names, pick a few different names.
Mm-hmm.
And when they like a name, they will immediately respond to you.
So what other things?
Amazing, the power of naming them.
Is it? Yeah. What other things have you learned from birds?
I've learned that it's, I've learned so much. I could write a 3,000-page book on the subject. But what I've learned mostly is just how much love we are surrounded by.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so wonderful to be aware of it. It's hard to describe in words. Because it's not as if I was an anti-bird person, and
right.
I used to always admire them. But once you begin to recognize just how loving they are, every moment becomes a magical moment. And, you know, one suddenly has so many friends around one, and one can go out and just be there, and someone will come and give you company.
Mm-hmm.
And the power of gratitude and also the fact that as a human we have lost the ability to communicate because our language is so sophisticated,
mm-hmm.
and complex and easy in one way that we have actually lost the ability to listen to other sounds and other meanings that other sounds carry. Whereas the birds, they are very used to listening to other languages because all the birds have a different song and a different voice and a different language. And they're also used to listening to the sounds that other animals make. So they are actually tremendous communicators.
Do you know,
and
do they?
In terms of body language and behavior, because their language is simpler than ours,
mm-hmm.
they use show and tell as a very integrated and enormous part of their vocabulary, so to speak.
Are you able to tell with a bird, you know, what if they're feeling good or happy or if something's bothering them? How do they display that or convey that?
Yeah, it's different with different birds. And certainly one can tell a lot, but I won't say that I can always read them perfectly. But one can tell when they are quiet and sad or reflective or, you know, feeling jovial and being naughty.
Right.
Even when they're embarrassed or awkward and self-conscious, or even when they're trying to be cheeky.
Uh-huh.
One can tell these different emotions quite easily.
And is that through their sound or through body language?
It's a combination. Sometimes it's sound.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often it is their body language. And sometimes it's a combination of the two. But they have different sounds to express grief. When they lose their chicks, for example. And they have different sounds when they want to tell you how happy they are with what's happening and that they are pleased to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
They may not necessarily burst into song. Sometimes they have softer sounds that do both. and there's a distinct difference between them. And sometimes it's just the look in their eyes, you know.
Right. Right. So I, you know, because I am, I'm just so connected to the animal world. I'm always, one of the questions I always ask is, what message do bird, like for you, what message do birds have for humans? Do they have something that they want us to know, that they want us to be conscious of?
What the birds' message that I've got from the birds time and again is that they are longing to be friends with humans. And they're longing to be friends with us. They're longing to share love with us. They're longing to communicate.
And do they, I always see animals as teachers, guides, and healers. Do they have things to teach us? What do they have to teach us? I know they have things to teach us.
I'm sorry, Christine. The line is a bit soft, and I missed the second part of your question.
I was saying that animals, I always see them as teachers, guides, and healers for us, and I'm wondering, you know, from your experience with them, what do you feel that they want to teach us? What can they teach us?
They can teach us the power of what I call true communication.
Mm.
You know, when one of the magpies died, I didn't know that the magpie had died. And I was calling for her. And, you know, they're busy with their own lives. Sometimes they come very quickly. Sometimes they come after a while. Sometimes other birds go and call them. So I didn't pay too much attention when she didn't turn up. And I called again. And I could hear the crows making a noise on a tree. And I thought, that's unusual. They're trying to tell me something. But I didn't listen. I thought, oh, they must be busy doing something of their own over there, chasing a hawk or something, and I didn't pay any attention. A few hours later, when I was walking that way, I found out that she had died, and the crows had been trying to tell me that she had died,
mm-hmm.
and that she was over there. And I felt so terrible for having ignored their message. When I came back, and I went and spoke to her son and told him what I had discovered, because I didn't know whether he knew. And it, apparently he did know, because they become, you know, different birds mourn in different ways.
Yes.
And the magpies, who are great singers under normal circumstances, become very quiet, whereas the crows actually sing out.
Hmm.
And anyway, after speaking to him, I sort of saw the crow sitting above the tree, and I just softly whispered to the crow and said, I should have paid more attention. I should have listened to you. You were trying to tell me what had happened. And within seconds, crows from all over the valley, literally flying, you know, miles, collected on Molly's tree, and they called me down. And they mourned with me.
Oh, what a beautiful story.
And that is just such a tremendous power of communication. You know, that they are here, they are aware of our feelings. And they are more intuitively aware of our feelings. And they appreciate every bit of care and concern that we give them. And they want to be with us. And I think that is the biggest, you know, thing that they're here to teach us.
It's really hearing you talk, hearing your stories, it really is shifting something inside of me. I mean, I know when I go outside and I can feel the birds anxious for me to come out, you know, just really, and it'll be interesting. I'll have to let you know what happens as I walk through, you know, Brooklyn, New York.
I would love to know.
And start talking to the birds around here. So tell me about your website.
What we did, you know, we knew nothing about birds apart from a little bit when our journey with them began, and Maggie has been a teacher from day one. He's been a bird with a purpose.
Right.
And we have learned so much. And we thought, my goodness, this is amazing, and we want to share it with others. But we don't want it to be heavy and dry, so we have heaps of photographs and lots of stories. And at one level, it would take me a couple of years to put it all up. Mm-hmm. But we sort of made a selection of that, and we've put it up on the website in terms of slideshows and little stories so that we can share this with people and, you know, just sort of spread the message that, mm-hmm. you know, there's much more. A bird, I used to think a bird was just a bird, you know.
Right.
And I've discovered that they're so deeply spiritual that, you know, it's a responsibility to let everyone know that. Mm-hmm. And that when we knock down a tree or we, you know, sort of endanger the environment in any way, we are actually really hurting someone else's family.
Right.
And, you know, to create that awareness and to share this wonderful realization that we don't have to be all a David Attenborough or a Steve Irwine and be experts at going out there on safaris or wildlife treks and be able to connect with them,
mm-hmm.
to be able to connect with birds and nature and wildlife. It doesn't matter where we are. At this point in time, we are still lucky enough to have wildlife around us in some form. So whether we are in the city or whether we are in the country, all we need to do is talk to them and start making friends with them wherever we are.
And, you know,
so it's with the intention of sharing those stories, mm-hmm. and for connecting with other people who would like to share their stories with us as well.
Right. I mean, you know, what I love about what you're saying is that it's so simple. You know, and I mean, I think you said it when you said you don't have to be like an expert going out on safari. It's simple. It's really just starting. It's opening up, saying hello, making a connection, seeing animals as spirit, and having a communication with them. And I think that's so beautiful. What's the website address?
It's www.wingedhearts.org.
Okay, so it's WINGED, wingedhearts.org, right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, anything else you want to share about your bird friends or your life with them?
Yes, I would like to share the fact that it is not as difficult as it sounds because, you know, someone like me, I'm a little bit bird phobic.
Are you?
I'm a little bit nervous that if I touch a bird, I might accidentally injure it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel nervous about touching a bird. So what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't require any special skills in that sense. One can just make friends with them from a distance, mm-hmm. even.
I think that you know, when you mentioned that you're bird phobic, I think many people share that. I know there was in the spring here, it's always kind of challenging because a lot of the birds, the chicks, fall out of the nest too early. And I don't know if they are asked to leave or, you know, wind shakes them or what happens. But, you know, we find them on the ground. And but in this particular instance, I had come out of the apartment and there was a group of women standing in a circle, and I walked by, and I happened to know one of the women, and she said, oh, you can help. And I said, what's going on? And I looked, and in the middle of the circle was this little baby bird, and you know, he was obviously sort of disoriented. And So I picked him up and I walked across the street with him on my finger and I put him in a tree and I actually did let everybody know birdwise that he was there. But it was interesting because they were all afraid to do anything. They didn't know what to do. And I thought that was interesting, that they were just almost paralyzed. So I think, you know, your message to to just start in a very simple way of connecting and saying hello and begin by communicating is just, it's so, I think it's really important for people to know that you don't have to do anything special, just be, right?
That's right. And they have an incredible ability to understand you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I speak in English with them,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have any problems following what I'm trying to say.
Right. well, truly, Geeti, I'm going to go out and I'm going to start talking to them and I'm going to let you know what happens.
I would love to hear.
Well, I have just so enjoyed having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking time to be here and from such a distance. And I really, really appreciate your story. And I hope that people visit your website and really find out more about Maggie and all the birds that you communicate with and live with and share their stories. And it's just wonderful. So thank you so much for being here.
And thank you very much, Christine, for inviting me to your show and giving me the opportunity to share Maggie's stories with you and your listeners. And I would like to thank all of you and invite you, if you like the stories, to read some more on the website and to send me your stories as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. So thank you so much. And keep in touch and we'll keep posted on what's happening in Maggie's world.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that just, I mean, honestly, I am going to go out and I'm going to start talking to the birds and see what happens, and I'll let you know. I am just fascinated. And by all means, if you go out and you start to create relationships with the birds in your area, let me know what happens too. And, you know, it's funny, as she was talking, I was thinking about an experience that I had when I lived upstate in the Adirondacks. And I lived across from a park area, natural forest park area where people would hike, and there was a pond. And the one day I was going for a short walk, and as I was walking down this path, there was a chipmunk who had gotten run over. And I felt so bad for this chipmunk, and I felt that where he was going to continue to be run over. And it really bothered me. So I went back and I got a shovel and I picked him up and I created a little burial place for him. And when I looked up, what I saw was a line of chipmunks all standing there as I buried their friend. And it was just such a magical experience. And they were, I could feel their gratitude for having done this for their friend. So it's not just birds, you know, it's really all animals that we can have these kinds of relationships with. And really what it's about is seeing them as spirit and recognizing them, saying hello to them and seeing that they have families and they have experiences. And even, you know, another really fun story, when I was pregnant with my son and I went to the hospital. I was in labor. I had him. And when I came home, there had been a squirrel in the backyard who I would say hello to frequently. And when I came home, the squirrel had left tulips on the window ledge, which it was just an amazing thing. There were these tulips sitting on the outside on the window ledge from the squirrel. So, you know, by all means, go connect with the animals in your area, whether it be birds or other animals. And just communicate with them. Say hello. Say thank you for being here. Thank you for wanting to communicate. And let us know what happens. And certainly check out Geeti and Ron's website at wingedhearts.org. So I have another question from a listener. This question comes from Marilyn in Texas. And Marilyn says, I have a 12-year-old small poodle named Pepper who is losing her hearing. Can you help me find a natural medication to help her hearing a little? So, Marilyn, I'm going to assume that you visited the vet and you've ruled out infection, blockages, or tumors in the ear canal. And we're just going to look at this as though it's strictly a loss of hearing due to aging. And I find that the essential oil helichrysum is known for assisting with hearing loss. It's used for regenerating tissue and nerves and improving the circulation and skin conditions. The oil can be massaged topically around the base of the ear. It can be massaged in the opening of the ear, but never place the oil inside the ear canal. We're just working with the outer area of the ear. And you can also place it behind the ear at the base of the skull and along the jawline. Use just a drop for each ear. You place the drop on your finger. Don't drop the oil right into the ear. And my suggestion is to do a spot test with the oil first. Place it on the tip of your dog's ear and wait to make sure that she doesn't have any reaction to the oil. If you do find that the oil is too strong, you can dilute it with olive oil. It would be one drop of the helichrysum to a teaspoon of olive oil. And be sure to get a high-quality oil. A good quality helichrysum is going to cost about $45 for half an ounce. That's 15 milliliters. And if you haven't started already, use hand signals with Pepper. Use hand signals with certain words so that Pepper begins to associate the signals with the words. And this way, if her hearing continues to deteriorate, she will make an easy transition into responding to your hand commands. And remember to be consistent with the hand commands. If you need to, make yourself a chart so that you know what command you're using with which word. So Marilyn and Pepper, I hope this helps. If you have questions about your animal's health, wellness, or behavior, you can email it to me at connect@consciousanimal.com, or you can call the Enlightened Listeners line at 214-615-6505, extension 9250. You can also use that line to call in and just let us know what you're thinking about your animals or all animals. Things that you have on your mind, things that you want to talk about, if you've got a cause that you're supporting, you can call in. Again, that number is 214-615-6505, extension 9250, and that line's open all the time. It's not our live listener call-in line. It's a line that's open all the time. You can call in and just give us your thoughts about anything in the animal world. I did want to follow up on a story that I talked about last week, which was the situation in Puerto Rico with the pets that had been confiscated from the homes, and then sadly the company that had done the extraction had injected the animals with something. They're still not sure what it was, and then apparently tossed them over a bridge instead of taking them to an animal shelter. And most of the dogs died. There have been a couple of things that have transpired around this. There's been a number of protests in Puerto Rico about the way that the animals were handled and the treatment of the animals, which I think is really powerful and important, that people are using their voice to let the government in Puerto Rico know that this is not acceptable. And there's been a lawsuit that's been started. And I think that each pet owner is asking for $50,000 in turn for what's happened. And I think that it is really drawing attention to what is going on in Puerto Rico with how animals are treated. And I think that there has been an evolution in people being able to speak out about it, in people being able to express their opinion, and for things to start to change. So that's a very powerful thing that's going on right now. And I believe that takes us to the end of today's show. I'd like to thank my guest, Geeti House, and her husband, Ron, who wasn't on the phone but is definitely part of wingedhearts.org. Please visit their website for more fascinating stories and updates on the birds in Geeti and Ron's life, and to send them your stories about the birds in your life. Thank you for listening to Conscious Animal Radio. I'm your host, Christine Agro. Visit ConsciousAnimalRadio.com for past shows and behind-the-scenes interviews. And remember to visit our sponsor, PetPop.com, where pets are popular. If you have questions about the animals in your life, you can also contact me through PetPop's Health Experts page, or you can always send an email to Conscious Animal Radio. to actually connect at ConsciousAnimalRadio.com or use our Enlightened Listener line. Tune in next week at 12 noon Eastern Time, and until then, take some time to connect with the animals around you and let me know about your experiences. Thanks again for listening, and have a great week.